Brandon,
how are you doing?
Still trying to get home. How are you doing?
No. I'm good. Just finished some din din.
Very nice. Din din.
Welcome everyone to this week's episode of The Writer's Block. My name is Brandon Morehouse,
and I'm Jake Flugiger.
And this week we're going to be talking about allegories. Now, before we get into that, we got to do our usual opening spiel, right?
Well, first we got to say, how was your week?
You know, not bad. I've had better weeks. It hasn't been too bad. You know, I got to get some Drano. My bathroom sink is a little backed up, so I'm hoping that'll help clean it.
Again?
You know, it's the drain. It's the type of drain. It picks up stuff real easily. And plus, I have hard water, so part of me is like, I think you probably just have a calcium buildup. And
lame.
Yeah, so I'll get some Drano this week at the grocery store and run it down, and hopefully that tends to clean it up a little bit. So hopefully that'll help. It's a nuisance. It's not the end of the world, but
we'll make it work, right?
We'll make it work, like we always do. How's your week going, other than you're sitting in traffic?
Other than I'm sitting in traffic, my week has been fascinating.
That's a choice word.
This week has been challenging at work. We'll put it that way.
I'm sorry to hear that.
It is all good. I am excited that it is Wednesday and it is writer's block time, and that makes me happy.
Yeah, it's hump day. It's hump day. Let's get humped. Oh,
wow. Sorry. Just wow.
All right. So those of you that are on the live chat, feel free to tap that mic and join in on the conversation. Jake, where can everyone listen back to us at if they're not on the live chat?
Well, if you are not on the live chat, hopefully you can hop over to podbean.com and give us a like and a follow and a comment and all the things. And if you don't want to be on podbean.com, guess what? You can find us on any of the streaming platforms.
Yes, I want to see. We had a good streak going for downloads. I want to see if we didn't hit it.
No.
Wait. No, we did. We did. We got one today.
Oh, good.
We got one today. So hopefully that's 22 days straight. That's a hell of a streak of downloads. Jake and I have been, I want to say fangirling, but I know that term's not used properly. But we have been ecstatic about it. So we don't know what's happening, and we're fine with that. Like,
we are totally fine with that.
22 days straight makes me so those of you that are listening or part of the community, as you may know, we do an off-topic topic, and this week Jake is hitting me with a topic that I don't know what he's prepped for. So Jake, give me your off-topic topic.
So of course I'm gonna totally blank the how to phrase this. There is a new ruling out there that there are no longer allowed to be non-compete clauses.
Okay.
So if you've got a job and you had signed a non-compete clause, it is void and invalid now.
Correct.
So that means that you can go out and find another job right away instead of waiting 6 months to go and find a job with a competitor or something like that. Correct. Which is huge. But this also might be affecting us as authors.
Okay.
And the way that this could affect us is that we might be able to, so let's say that you wrote a mystery novel and your publishing company said, hey, you know, you aren't allowed to write another mystery novel because we don't want it competing with our sales, right?
Okay.
So there is this chance that this could affect authors and allow authors to write in the same genre, in the same ballpark, in the same frame as something that they've already written and still be able to get it published. So my question for you, Brandon, is, if you had to write in the same genre that you are currently writing in and pitch a similar story to your future would-be agent to take to publishers, what would the premise of that story be?
Are you fucking kidding me? You're asking me to come up with a work in progress off the top of my head?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not... That was such a long lead-in for something that I was not expecting.
I know. I did a good job this time.
You got me. Okay, so I have to pick the same genre that I'm currently writing in, which is probably SFF, science fiction fantasy.
Sort of.
But I have to pick a new... It can't be the one I'm currently using.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I guess off the top...
And by the way, yours is not science fiction fantasy.
Oh, what is mine?
Dystopian.
Oh, well, okay. if I had to write, like, a dystopian story... Okay, off the top of my head, it's the story of... the last human. It's the last human on Earth. Mankind has, like, kind of like a what is it? Apes. What's the name of that?
Planet of the Apes?
It's kind of like a Planet of the Apes where it's like there's only one human left, and how they kind of, like, this is where we kind of went wrong.
Sort of okay. So I don't know. It's like dystopian post-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess. I'm not okay. In love with that idea, but I would need to workshop it, right? Like,
well, yeah. I mean, I asked you a really hard question and put you on the spot.
I thought you were going to be like, well, how do you feel about that? Well, what the fuck do you think? How do you think I feel about a non-competes being no longer?
Of course. I'm not going to give you some easy thing like that. Come on.
The crowd should know that. What would you, if you had to write a new story in... I can up that question. I will call your bluff. If you had to write a story in the genre I'm writing in, what would your story be?
Okay. If I had to write a story in your genre, I would be talking about how there's an entire society of people that are living in a cave system underneath the earth because of solar flares and... global warming.
An underground society. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. I like that. That's a good one. So, okay. Well, and on that note, Jake, in comments below, what would you, if you had to write a story in this? We'll say what I'm looking at. What would your story be? Jake.
Yes.
Ooh, I can tell you're in the car. You got a little hum behind you. But that's okay. So, we're talking about allegories.
Brandon?
What?
Keep going.
Okay. We're talking about allegories, and this topic got suggested to us, and I was like, well, you know what? We really should, as authors, know what an allegory is. So, Jake, what is an allegory?
An allegory is basically a story, a poem, or a picture, and we're obviously talking about the story portion of this, that has a hidden message or meaning.
Okay. What's kind of a good example of that?
So, there's a book called, and the hidden message can be spiritual, it can be political, there's all sorts of, you know, different kind of sub-genres, I guess, of
an
allegory.
Okay.
But, like, The Pilgrim is a famous book that is an allegory. You have books that are allegories for other things that are written for all different age groups. Some of the most famous allegorical stories are by a really famous dude named Aesop.
I was going to say that. I was doing research today, a little bit of research today, for our stuff for the week. And it was like, oh, like Aesop's Fables and Grimm fairy tales. Like those are really good examples of allegories because they're telling a story, but there's also like a meaning behind it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that's supposed to be teaching a lesson.
Right. So the one that comes to my head, and this is where I'm, there's an example, and it's a really simple, the tortoise and the hare.
Okay, tortoise and the hare, let's take it.
Right, let's go with that one, because it teaches you that it's not always about, and this one's a good one for me, and I know Jake is probably like, oh, that's interesting that I picked that one. Because I'm very
loving,
much I'm
loving the fact that you picked this
fucking,
one.
The fucking irony that's coming out of my mouth right now, right?
Like, oh, it's brilliant.
Carolyn, go ahead.
The tortoise and the hare, totally. But also, Jake, you write middle fiction, right? Would you consider
middle grade
Lois Lowry's The Giver? Would that be an
allegory? Oh, absolutely. Ooh, okay. I would consider that an allegory.
It's messed up when you read it as an adult. You're like, whoa.
I think that there are a lot of books that could that are not considered allegorical but could be. If that was a more common terminology used for current modern day stuff. What I mean by that is, like, there's a lot of books have, like, life lessons and that type of thing in them, but we don't call them allegorical by any means. And really, we can use that term. It's kind of an antiquated term in a lot of ways that gets brought up every once in a while for a book in some respect. Just not a term that is used frequently in modern society, I should say.
I think it's difficult because allegories, when we talk about it in the, like, the description, like, this is what it means, right? Everyone kind of looks at it differently, right? So, like, I think of the story of there's this teacher, an English teacher, and she's like, okay, so the curtain's blue. What was the writer trying to represent with the color is blue? And it's like, blah, blah, blah. And they come up with all these things in the class, and the writer's like, it was just blue. Like, you're reading into it. And that's not, yeah, it had nothing, it was just blue. But it's my favorite color, right? Like, I worry sometimes we as artists tend, like, overcomplicate things. But then there's that aspect where it's like, it's just blue. Jesus, fuck, it doesn't mean anything. It's blue.
Go ahead, Carolyn.
Sorry, I often think of Hemingway's The Old Man and the Sea, and I'm like, what if it's just about a guy going fishing?
Yeah, what if it's not allegorical, exactly. And it's just simply a story about a dude going fishing?
Right. I mean,
and how weird would that be?
Like, he comes back and he's like, no, I was just about a guy reading. But can a story become an allegory because of the change in times? Like, we look back on it, you're like, this is what they're kind of talking about, but the writer at the time writing it didn't mean that.
Yeah, I think that can be something. And I also think that there are stories that are written that kind of accidentally happen to become allegorical.
Right.
Whether the author is aware of it or not.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of circumstances like what you were talking about, Brandon, where, you know, especially, and I hope everybody takes this in a lighthearted fashion. Like, we kind of joke about it in the writing community that, you know, we're going to put out this book and some English teacher is going to be, you know, and what's the really deep subliminal message that we're supposed to get from this? And like we were saying, like, what if it's just about a guy going fishing?
It's just about a guy going fishing. It's nothing else. I think... I think that happens more than we realize. Like, people are like, oh, like, there's one of my books that I joke about that with, where in New Age Gods book 2, one of the characters, Jake, is at an art gallery, right?
Yep.
And she's like, I don't get what they mean. And people are like, there's these art critics there. And like, oh, she sits down on a bench. And people start like congregating around her. And she's like, I'm just sitting here. Well, what are you trying to do? Nothing. I'm just taking a fucking seat. Like, I'm just sitting down. Like, why do you have to overthink all this when there's, if you just make it simple, right?
Why do you have to put meaning behind
everything? Doesn't have to have a meaning, and your story doesn't have to be an allegory. God damn it. I'm going to want to say algorithm all fucking night. That's that marketing.
If you keep doing that, I will laugh.
That's my marketing. Because your book can't be an algorithm. Wait, what?
It's just programming.
Your book, you are right. Your book can't be an algorithm.
Jason, what did you say?
Oh, I was just saying it's just your programming.
Yeah, it's.
Well played, Jason. Well played.
Well worded. Well worded. Nice. So, Jake, let's go back to Tortoise and Hare because it's very simple and everyone tends to know that one. What is – there's the story and then there's the meaning behind the story. What is that?
So, you know, the story pretty much everybody knows, you know, the tortoise and the hare race, and the hare gets a little bit cocky and lays down to take a nap, and the tortoise goes ahead and wins the race. And the meaning behind it, and this is where Aesop's fables are so wonderful, is that a lot of times the meaning is right there in front of you. It's a very simple way to put that out there. And it's slow and steady wins the race. You know, you don't have to be the very fastest. You don't have to, you know, kick everybody's butt right off the bat. It's more about taking that progress and just keep on
which
going.
Which is rich.
Just keep on keeping
which
on.
Is rich for authors. Like, it it's is like, rich God damn, authors. that's a tough pill to swallow. Like, ugh.
All right, you guys. So you used a very complicated and hard to say word to literally say parable.
And parable is another way to put this. And I think we used allegory because that was what was suggested.
Yes.
Was allegorical, you know, literature and stuff. But parable is another great way to put it, too.
I mean, like in my book, my main character in the first book is literally like the king of parables. Like one of his famous, well, I call it famous one because he repeats it several times, is when people say time moves too fast, he says time doesn't move fast or slow. It's determined on the amount of grains beneath your feet versus the ones falling in on your head.
Love it. Love it.
Nice.
So that's a parable.
You wrote that on purpose, though, right?
Yeah.
You wrote that on purpose. And so a lot of these allegories don't even have to be, they don't have to have a wide expanse for the entire novel even. It can be more, hey, I'm throwing in this one little line. And yes, you have to decode it. And yes, it's a hidden meaning behind it. But it doesn't have to be something that's extremely complex. Right. And I think, again, with Aesop's fables, those are
parables.
Really kind of, they're parables.
It's a more palatable word, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. It's like, stop saying allegories. Like, stop it.
Well, I mean, we're going to be listening to Brandon, you know, stumble over algorithms all night.
Instead, we're going to use parables, fables, fairy tales even. All that have meanings that are, you know, hidden beneath the surface, so to speak. So, yes, we're telling a story, but there's something more to it.
And correct me if I'm wrong on this one, Jake. I feel like allegories, I'm gonna poke M every chance I get. Allegories became
algorithms.
became very popular when, with the church, not like with the church, but like when writing was not okay by the church, so you had to like put hidden meanings in your stories. Would that be
there was a lot of that, and there is a religious background to a lot of allegorical tales, to those parables and things. There's a big there's a lot of parables that are in religious texts, and not just the Christian ones either. Right. They've been a method of teaching for a very long time, where you can, you know, sit around the fire and tell a story, but also tell another story deeper than that, and that not everybody might pick up on necessarily.
Right. And I think that's more prevalent in like pictures and paintings and stuff like that. Like,
oh, very much,
very
so
strong, especially in like medieval art. It's very much there. Like, this is not what this is. What you see is not what the meaning behind this is. There's a deeper meaning behind it. And
yeah, it's kind of like a hidden in plain sight.
Right?
Yes.
That's how I think of Alex. It's like, it's there. Just, it's not for everyone to decipher. Not everyone can. And it's kind of like, it's like a secret. It's a hidden society sort of a thing.
It is. It is. And I know how much you love the idea of
I
that.
I do love that idea. I need to write that story about, that's what my story should have been about, the secret society in the future of like homeless people or something like that. Like, they're secretly running the world.
I think that sounds brilliant.
I think John Wick beat you on that, Brandon.
You know, I have to admit, I've never seen John Wick.
M has a point. There is a whole like network of homeless people run by Lawrence Fishburne. So.
And it's awesome. I mean, like, really awesome.
Like, Em, I can tell you got to, I can tell in your tone. Like, it's awesome. It's really, she's fangirling.
I am. I mean, until he fell down like a million stairs and, you know, bounced back and started fighting, number four sucked, but the rest of them were pretty good.
Em, okay. I had the exact good same reaction. I was like, how many stairs can he fall down and start fight? This is impossible.
But, you know, well, he killed five people with a pencil. Come on. Is that a parable?
I mean, I could make it a parable.
I think if you, like, you could almost make anything a allegory.
Brandon?
I'm going to do that.
Stop needling everybody.
I'm
going to
needle. Let me needle.
Okay, you can needle. But a lot of the key phrases that we have in that people use in everyday things, like flattery will get you nowhere or everywhere, depending on who you're talking to, is based on the tales that are like Aesop's fables. And so it's kind of been a guide for society as a whole, these stories and these things, which kind of dictate how we are to react and move through life.
Kind of like the faith, having the faith of a mustard seed.
Yeah, just like that. That's another great one, where you have a phrase that is now commonplace in language, and although it has roots in a religious basis and everything, it's something that people every day use. And it's become this something larger than what it first was intended for. Okay. So there's a lot of that out there. And so, Brandon, I would like to bring up kind of my favorite things.
Okay, are you gonna break into song?
No.
Get ready to throw glitter.
These are a few of my favorite things.
Yeah, so not
okay, my bad. Sorry.
No, I was going to dive into the world of fairy tales.
Okay, let's talk fairy tales, which we that should be a topic for season four. I'm going to put it on the list now because that's a whole.
That sounds okay. Brilliant. We're going to talk about it in the allegorical, parable, fable, fairy tale version. Okay. Now, so we can still have it for season four. But really, when you look at the original fairy tales put together by the Grimm brothers, Hans Christian Andersen, all of them are geared towards teaching a lesson. Right.
Terrifying children.
Terrifying children, which was part of the reason that they were written. You're telling a story, but you're really trying to tell these children, like, there is stuff that you should be worried about.
Yeah, because it's not that they're telling... One of the girls at work describes it in a way where she's like, it's not saying that dragons are real. It's saying that dragons can be defeated. Like, there's a lesson behind it. Like, it may not be obvious. Yeah. Like,
Hansel and Gretel.
Yes.
Yeah, Hansel and Gretel is a big one. Em, why don't you explain the parable behind Hansel and Gretel?
Oh, don't take candy from strangers.
Don't take candy from strangers. Which, in today's world, is very applicable.
Absolutely. But if you read the original, I mean, it is a literal horror story.
It is, and most of them are. And Em, I really think that you should have some characters in your books named Hansel and Gretel, but maybe you can shorten them or tweak them a little bit, but I think that would be a brilliant twist.
You could do like Hansel.
Well, you could just do Hans.
Yeah.
Hans and Gretchen.
And Greta. Gretchen. Perfect.
There you go.
I've still got number four to write, so hey, anything's possible.
What are some other famous ones, Jake?
One of my personal favorites, in as far as this topic goes, is Little Red Riding Hood.
Okay, that's a real good one. What's that one? What's the allegory?
The algorithm?
Son of a,
the son algorithm of a bitch. Of Little Red Riding Hood.
Confused.
I'm secretly an AI. I'm really a robot, y'all. Like, this is, I'm not,
oh
I'm
my gosh, that was much worse.
Little Red Riding Hood, what's that one about?
So I would hope most people know the story of Little Red Riding Hood, but really it's about the lecherousness of men and young women. So it's not a kind or fun story in that sense. And it's like all of the classic fairy tales, it's really pretty dark.
Well, and that's, you know,
a lot of levels.
That's if you look at a lot of Disney movies, they're based on these old stories, right? That's why they say Disney's blah, 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 right? And they're not like one of my favorites to read is Peter Pan. Disney's Peter Pan. And
is a much washed out version of the original.
Oh my God. The book was like, this is dark. This is fucking dark. Like,
and Brandon loved it.
I fucking loved it. It was amazing.
Which is why I think it's really funny that they have all these conditions for children's books and fairy and middle grades. Because if you read the originals on those, you're going, those kids were way more tolerable than what we have today.
Right.
Well, and I will agree, as long as you understand the parable portion of it. Like, it's pretty dark for us as adults. For the kids, honestly, I'm not sure that they understood what those tales were really supposed to be about. They just knew it was a scary story and to avoid this, that, and the other.
But would the question is, Jake, I've got a really good question for you since you work in a school and you write middle grade fiction.
Yes.
Would Snow White be allowed on the market today as a children's book?
Like the original?
Like in any version. I mean, you've got a young woman living in a cave with seven gut dudes.
Kevin.
Oh, I very much think it would not be not be allowed in that context. Like, I mean, obviously there's tons and tons of picture books that go over these fairy tales, but once again, they are very washed clean, so to speak. They've taken out all of the darker material and made it light and fun. These whimsical things, and they're not whimsical. They were there for a very specific
reason. I mean, the majority of them concerning young women were the horrors of having a stepmother.
Yeah. Yeah. And in that day and age, it was something to worry about.
And we will be talking about stepmothers and moms in a couple of weeks. That's a theme for one of our upcoming episodes, just so you know, Em and everybody.
So Brad,
yes, Jake.
You have a current work in progress. Yes. You know where I'm going with this.
I have
right?
a feeling. And I'm trying to think of the answer right now.
If your story were to have some parable or some hidden meaning, what would that be?
You know, I think of mine, and I think in very simplistic terms, it's how the rich treat the poor. And there's no difference. We're all the same.
It's like a kind of a twist on Robin Hood.
Yeah. Darker and more sci-fi, but yes. Like,
yeah.
Much darker.
Absolutely. So let's take a look, because in a lot of ways, your story is a very political statement.
Really? There is? I would have never guessed that.
Never guessed that. Ever.
Ever.
Notice the sarcasm.
Heavy on the sarcasm.
So we have your story that is very much a political commentary in a lot of ways, but it's not a hidden meaning necessarily. That's very blatant in what you're putting out there. Whereas you could look at like George Orwell's 1984 or Animal Farm, to be more specific, would be a better one.
Animal Farm would be a much better one, yeah.
Yeah, where you have, you know, a sweet story about animals in a barnyard, right?
Yeah, sure.
That's what it's about.
I mean, in a simplistic way.
And the not so simplistic way of this hidden meaning that we're supposed to understand
about the representation of how people want to get powerful and keep themselves power by making other people keep them in power. Like,
yeah,
communism.
It's all about communism and manipulation. Yeah. And that is very much an allegorical or parable story that is probably a little bit more blatant in its message, but it's still a very good example.
I'm gonna counterpoint that. I don't think it's as blatant as people like you and I and probably a lot of people in this group would understand that, but most people probably wouldn't catch on to that, even though it's pretty Carolyn. obvious. But
yeah,
for somebody,
Carolyn, go ahead
Carolyn or whoever.
Well, I was just going to say, the only reason I know that Animal Farm, you know, is a allegory on communism is because it was hammered into my head in school. I think if I read the book now, not knowing, I'm pretty sure I'd like to think I'd think there was a deeper meaning, but at the same time I could just be like, oh, it's about animals on a farm.
Yeah.
Yay. It's just like Charlotte's Web.
Yes,
it
is, exactly.
It is nothing like Charlotte's Web. Shut the hell up.
Oh, come on. There's a pig and everything.
Just because the setting's the same does not mean it's the same thing.
All right. All right. Kathleen, did you want to hop on here?
Yes. I just recently read a memoir called The Flying Child, A Cautionary Tale for Adults. And it is the story of childhood sexual abuse. And the way she breaks up this book is just wonderful. And she tells like the what happened part in a fairy tale story, which I could clearly know what she meant by this, but it was done in such a creative way. And then each chapter was followed by her interactions with she and her therapist and how she got through all of this and how she presented this fairy tale. It was the only way that she could tell her story in the beginning. And the book was, for anybody interested in that, was absolutely fascinating. I loved it. I dog-eared 24 pages. Oh, wow. That I really wanted to remember because they were so important for anybody that needed to read this.
Yeah.
It's just so creative. And she started to write a second, I don't know if it's a continuation of the same or a different style book, but I thought it was very creative and healing on her part.
Well, and you bring up a good point, Kathleen. It's how we tell, when we tell that story, right? She's telling it in a fairy tale setting.
Yeah.
And how she gets the point across so somebody else can understand that her story, right?
Oh, it was amazing.
It makes it much more palatable for the everyday person.
Yeah.
That's never been in that situation and wouldn't know like the red flags and things to look for and so on and so forth. But putting it in this situation and changing it up just slightly and making it a fairy tale, mm-hmm. that makes that story more powerful because then it's like, you get the point, right? And then it's a very creative way of doing that.
And for the a survivor that was directly purposefully reading this, and I think she's using it for an educational value as well, because mm-hmm. she's a very strong advocate. You recognize the feelings of her fairy tale characters, especially the little princess. You know, it was just so, 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 so good. And just meant so much to me. And I put it right next to my own memoir.
Oh, I love that.
And it'll live there forever.
And I love I love the fact that this author chose to do something stylistically that's very different. Like you said, choosing to deal with the therapy portion between chapters and stuff is just brilliant. Love it.
And she's from the UK. And I found her on X and have followed her for probably a year, and the book came out, and so it came out in the UK first, so I kind of had to wait, and it cost me a lot more money because I wanted it right away. And then it finally got to our Amazon here, but it was well worth it. It was just a spectacular book, and she's doing such great work with it, with counselors and hospitals and schools and all kinds of stuff.
That's awesome. That's really awesome.
Thank you.
I would like to segue a little bit with that and bring up a movie, which is also a book. There's a very clear reason why they turned it into a movie, though. And Brandon, I don't know if you've seen it or not, but Life of Pi.
I've never. It's in my queue because I've read the book.
Okay. Okay.
I just read the book not that long ago. And how was the book, Brandon? The book was good. It was really good. It wasn't what I was expecting it to be. But apparently there's some hidden stuff behind it if you're bringing it up. And I'm interested to hear what you have to say about it, because I clearly did not catch on to it.
So it's the story of this young man who went through a very treacherous ordeal, and the animals that he uses to tell parts of the story are representative of the people that actually existed in the real life story itself. Mm-hmm. And so there's these deep hidden messages about the animals that were chosen and their interactions with him and with each other. It was, again, like what Kathleen was saying, is we're taking a story that is very difficult and we're putting a twist on it, where we're changing it up a little bit to something that is either more palatable for the reader or more palatable for the person who has lived through it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great story.
you got all that though, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, obviously.
I did not catch any of that. And, you know, I think that's the beauty of stories, right? Because somebody will catch on to that and then they're like, oh my God, this is what they're talking about. And it's like a complete revelation, right? Whereas somebody else, I'm like, oh, it's just about a story about a kid that's stuck on a boat, or he's trying to survive this like incident, right? Like, it's good. So, but now that you say that, I'm like, wow, that was actually, if he's going through and like there's key things about it, that's actually got, I haven't watched the movie yet, so, but the book was amazing.
I think the movie illustrates the topic in a little bit more accessible way for a lot of people. So I haven't read the book, so I'm excited to read it and put it on my list. But I think that is an excellent one as far as a modern day story with that has an allegory element to it.
Yeah. What so I think of other shows, because I'm a very visual person. I like my, you know, we all know that. Stuff that has hidden meanings behind it. Now, would you say that happened a lot in like 90s cartoons?
I think that there are a lot of innuendos in 90s cartoons.
Okay, so
I don't know if I would call an innuendo an allegory necessarily.
That's where I was going with that.
But I do think that there are kind of subtext allegorical mm-hmm. things that happen in a lot of movies, to where children would not necessarily see it, but adults definitely right. do. And because of that, I think that there are a lot of 90s TV shows, cartoons, and then obviously movies previous and up to this day that are hinting at things outside of what the story is actually saying.
That's where I was going with that. Thank you. You picked up on that real. You picked up on that real fucking quick.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. I am.
This is why you're the smart one, right? Like, I'd have been like, I don't fucking.
I am not the smart one. Give me a break. Oh my gosh, you're such a dork.
I'm the comic relief. We all know that. I own that. Just deal with it, Jake. Just deal with it, Jake.
Carolyn says 100%. Okay.
100%. Jake's.
I feel you on that, Brandon. I'm the comic relief of my own life. So
you
gotta own it. Let's stay in your lane.
You are both ridiculous.
Somebody, you gotta have an R2 and you gotta have a C-3PO. Just saying.
Oh my gosh. If you will stop bringing that up, please. Oh.
Okay.
So, Jake, I've got a question for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this has always been a hot topic for me, because some people can see parables or things inside of movies, cartoons, and I'm going to bring up a very famous one that was a nuisance for doing so. Now, what happens when people look too deep into cartoons for children and see things that aren't really there?
Okay.
That's not an allegory, correct?
So, no, it's not. It's a hidden meaning doesn't necessarily mean that it's an allegory. A hidden truth or a hidden message within something is an allegory. So when you look at, specifically when you're looking at kids shows and things like that.
Let's go into something as innocent as Bugs Bunny.
Okay, Bugs Bunny. Let's talk about Bugs Bunny. There are context things, especially when you look at like Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse, when dealing with things like wars at the time, and big political topics and issues. And are there some messages in there? Yes. Are what I call them an allegory? No. It's not that the entire story was based on trying to get across this point, this message. It's small little blips that are kind of a dig at specific political figures or specific political parties. I don't know that I would call that a parable by any means.
Well, you know the one that I'm referring to. You have to.
I yes.
Pat Buchanan.
Yeah.
He saw things in cartoons that just wasn't there.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And that's where you kind of have to take everything with a grain of salt, so to speak.
I mean, he said that Bugs Bunny was a cross-dresser. Okay. He's a freaking cartoon. Or it was a freaking cartoon. So.
And even if that is there, that doesn't mean that this is some
plot,
hidden message or plot or conspiracy theory type thing to get across a specific agenda, so
well,
to speak.
Well, in all fairness, he did cross-dress.
He did.
He did. Yeah. He did. He did. So.
And he kissed Elmer Fudd.
Yes. I was like, but he did. And he did.
But
I'm going to tell you right now, anybody that sees that much gay in children's cartoons is something that somebody you need to worry about.
Yeah, they need to calm down.
They need to
I mean,
down
I was so glad when he died.
Damn, man. Jesus Christ.
JF says Dead Poets Society.
Oh my God, I love that.
Okay. JF, you can totally hop on here and join the chat. You can just click on that little mic button in the bottom left-hand corner and join us.
That would be cool too. I haven't seen Dead Poets Society in forever.
Which we know has been a really long time.
Been forever. So, Jake, what
Since you're just a kid, Brandon.
I think I'm the youngest one in this group.
You're the baby.
I don't know about that.
Jake, be quiet.
You're the baby.
I am the baby.
I have a horrible thing to admit, and that is that I have never seen Dead Poets Society.
Get the hell out of here, Jake. You're done. I'm muting you. You're done.
My God.
I deserve it. I deserve it.
Oh, man. Well, first of all.
Oh, Jake.
Hey, how are y'all? You. I feel like I can't talk about it now because I don't want to spoil it for you.
Oh,
he's never gonna watch it, so you might as well.
Oh, okay. Well, the whole thing as far as an allegory goes with Dead Poets Society is that it's definitely the Christ allegory. I mean, it's like you've got the Christ figure and he's going up against the authority and he's got this kind of band of disciples and they follow what he does. And then something happens and he's blamed for it. And then one of them turns on him. And then eventually like everybody turns on him. And it's kind of what my wife refers to as like a 2x4 allegory. It's like, look at the symbolism. I'm whapping you in the head with this 2x4. Look at the symbolism.
I love that. I never caught on to that. That actually, yeah.
That's great. I just thought it was a cool movie about a private school.
Well, and that is the allegorical part of that. That is the parable part of that. Is that there is a deeper meaning there. That there's more to the story. And if we're gonna into the religious aspect of that, like let's talk about the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Oh my God! I was literally just thinking Narnia. I was like Narnia. That
Aslan, he's so not Jesus Christ.
No, no, never.
Not at all.
Not at
all.
Well, that was a good talk about that.
I think we're all on the same page on that one. Like,
you're welcome.
Yes. Welcome to this week's TED Talk. Like, that was it.
No, I there are certain texts and things that have been studied and pointed out so much that I feel like they cease to be an allegory in a certain sense, because gone is the need to read deeper into something because it has been so completely overanalyzed and everybody knows it and there's no freshness to it, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Good example is the Robin Hood effect.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And what's that? What's that? Explain that one further.
The Robin Hood effect is like, for years, it was like every other movie had somebody, you know, stealing from the rich and giving to the poor.
Right.
It was overdone. It was just, there wasn't just so many ways you could do it. Or the Three Musketeers. It was just overdone.
Okay, so I have a type of movie that I'm like, I know how this movie's going to play out. Like, and it's particularly in gay rom-com, right? For me. And maybe I'm wrong, but this is how I feel. And being a gay man, I see it. There's the trope of yes, I'm gay, Jake. Believe it or not. The trope of the hot gay guy, right? And then there's the falls in love with the nerdy gay guy. The nerdy gay guy, they fall in love and the one just wants to be accepted by the rest of the community or whatever. And he wants to go out and, you know, he's academic and all that shit, right? And then there's the hot gay guy that wants to be taken seriously and not just appreciated for his body. I'm like, that's what that makes me think of M, where it's kind of that same thing where it's like, for me, I see a gay rom-com, I'm like, that's what the story's gonna be. And they're gonna fall in love with each other at the end or some shit like that. Like,
yeah, and you know, straight rom-com seems to always have this very otherworldly gay guy who's the girl's best friend and goes shopping with her and all that bullshit. Yeah, it's overdone.
I mean, we play into those tropes, right? We totally do it. So because they work.
Into the tropes.
Like, Hallmark is known for that. That's what they've built their entire shit off of. Big city girl moves to small town and falls in love with local hunk during season, during the Christmas season.
And they hate each other to begin with. Yeah. I mean, right. Yeah.
It works.
So here, here, this begs the question then, are any of those stories, do any of them have an allegorical point to them?
Well, I think it would be, you know, you learn to accept each other for who they are and seeing past our own flaws. I don't like this about me, but someone else might not see it at all.
See, damn it. And that there
fucking,
we go
that
again.
Fucking hurt to have myself say that because Jake knows how I treat myself.
I don't know what you're talking about, Brandon. I did not bring that up for specific reasons whatsoever.
Damn, that went full circle. That fucking hurt.
Well, if you consider the allegories that were continual throughout a lot of the Disney movies against gays in the 90s and early 2000s, it became a literal allegory.
Yeah.
I mean, all the bad guys were kind of come across as being gay.
They have a flamboyant flair to them. I will say that.
I mean, there was a whole website developed just that.
So I think when we take a look at that as specifically, especially when we've taken out the parable or the allegorical elements of the original fairy tales, they had to insert other things that were kind of those low-key political messages about what was okay and what was not. Right. Because let's be honest, Disney drove most of our childhoods, and you kind of got a view of the world through what they put on the screen.
Right. Oh, Jake.
Yes? Guess
what?
We are
out of time, unfortunately. I gotta do our closing spiel. It's been a great conversation.
It has been a great conversation.
It's been fun talking about allegories.
Yeah, not algorithms.
Not algorithms, like my marketing mind wanted to say. Jake, we have a bunch of new listeners on here. Where can everyone listen back to us at?
Well, first of all, thanks for joining us, all you new people. We're wrapping up the show, but please join in next week, same time, same place. We'd love to see you. If you want to catch the rest of this episode or any of our other 50-plus episodes, you can find us on podbean.com, where we'd love for you to give us a like, a follow, a comment, whatever you want. Or you can find us on any of the streaming platforms.
Yeah. We have over 50 episodes, and it'll be 100 before we know it, Jake. We'll have to do something. Do something special for 100. That's a lot of episodes.
That is a lot of episodes. And we're going to get there really quick. Yeah.
fucking Carolyn. Next week, yeah. Jake, and I'm going to ask you this, and I know you don't know because you didn't do your homework. Did you do your homework? What's next week's topic?
So I want to make a point that this is an allegory in and of itself.
Oh, okay.
That you think that I did not do my homework because you just don't trust the fact that I can do things like this.
I don't trust a lot of people. So what's next week's episode?
Rude, you should at least trust me. It's poetry.
Look at that. That's the first in 3 seasons. That's the first.
Oh, give me a break. I knew the query letters.
Of course
one.
You knew the query letters one. I'm taking those out. Take those out. Anyways. Next week we will be right here on Twitter live at 7 p.m. Central Time. If you'd like to join in on the conversation, it's an open mic and we will be talking about poetry. So hopefully everyone shows up next week. Have a good week, everyone. We will see you later.
Bye.